Last week, we talked about the gift of anger, okay? And I did not complete that section. And I do want to complete it because there are these few things at the end here I really want you to have in your notes. And there are a lot of people requesting tapes, and we're getting them out as quickly as we can. So there are tapes made in the office. If any of you have requested them, see Bobby because they are ready. If you have not requested them, you need to do that so that we know. They're $2 a tape, just so that we can replace the tape. Okay. The thing I want to pick up with from last week that I didn't get to in the gift of anger is that anger can be a signal. Okay? Anger can be a signal. It can serve as a warning signal that I need to take a look at some aspect of my life. Anger tells me that there's something wrong. Okay? Remember, we've already been through the scripture, be angry and sin not. And anger is not a sin. It's what we do with that anger that becomes sin. Okay? So anger tells me that there's something wrong inside. It's a signal. When you become angry, you have identified that there is something wrong, and we need to know exactly what that is. Okay? And it may be a problem that needs a solution immediately. You may need to have to work on it. You might not be able to move it over to the left. And a lot of people, that's the way they deal with anger. They move it over to the left, and 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 they move it over to the left. And what are we doing? We are just building a slush fund that eventually is going to explode. And that's what we want to prevent. Okay, God can use anger to get our attention and make us more aware of the opportunities to learn, to grow, to deepen, to mature, to make significant changes for the good. If you get angry about something, you're going to do something about it. Okay? And this is what we were talking about. When God or Jesus became angry, they moved in a positive direction, not to destroy relationships, but to build and to recover relationships. Now, let's talk about anger as a motivator. Okay, anger is a motivator. Anger is a powerful source of motivation because of the energy that it brings with it. And we had discussed in a previous tape, some women, when they get angry, one of the positive motivating factors of cleaning your house, you get angry and you start whipping through that baby, and man, you can't believe how fast and everything's all neat and put in order. That's a positive way of expressing your anger. You haven't hurt anybody, you've done a positive thing, and everybody's going to be happy that the laundry's all caught up and everything's in order and the dinner's ready on the table. But it comes with a lot of energy, and you can't keep that energy bottled up inside. And that's why some of it comes out in a violent way, because you've got to get this out. You know, it's just like when you're in labor, there's 180 pounds of pressure that pushes that baby through the birth canal. There is no way you can cross your legs and hold it off. I mean, you know, that baby is going to come out. And that's the way anger is. When it's inside you, it is going to come out. I mean, it's, remember we talked about 455 times in the Old Testament alone, the word anger was mentioned, and 357 of those times were God's expression of anger. So you know that this emotion is going to come out, okay? We just have to find the right way to express it so that we don't injure other people. Okay, what about Abraham Lincoln when he felt great anger at the brutality and the inhumanity of slavery? He chose to invest his anger in changing the law to make it a better place to live. And so that was a positive way. Martin Luther said, "When I'm angry, I can write, I can pray, and I can preach well. For then my whole temperament is quickened, my understanding sharpened, and all mundane vexations and temptations are gone. When the rubber meets the road, I know where I am. When I have that energy, I can use it in a positive way." So he found a positive way in building the kingdom of God, okay? And I thought this was really, it's a secular illustration. And I'm just winding up this last part. Now we're going to start with the word on the new part, so you will get the Bible. I know Stephanie said, "Babe, where is this outline on the Bible?" Okay. Everybody's heard the word Lee Iacocca, who is the chairman of the Chrysler Corporation. And it provides an excellent example of leadership here in motivational potential of anger to get it going in the right direction positively. You will affect people with your anger. And how are you going to affect them? You will affect people. That's not a choice or an option. It's going to happen, okay? So how are you going to affect people? Lee Iacocca says, I got mad. My colleagues in Highland Park got mad. Tens of thousands of Chrysler people all across America got mad. Our labor unions, our suppliers, our lenders all got mad. We got so mad, we banded together. We talked things over, and working together, we fixed what was wrong at Chrysler. We doubled our productivity. We rejuvenated our factories. We cut our costs. We started building the highest quality cars and trucks made in America. In short, we turned things around. Now we're selling cars and making lots of money. So they got mad at what was going on in their company, and they decided to do something in a positive way. And they all band together. Just think what we could do with the anger expressed toward the enemy. I am so angry with the enemy, just what he's done this morning in our family and in other families. I just bound him. I was so glad I was in intercessory prayer last night. I was ready for this morning. But, you know, I am angry at what Satan is doing in our church with our families. He's trying to destroy families and relationships. And we need to band together. We need to take that anger. It says we can hate sin. We can hate sin. That you can do. We need to fight together as women and say, Satan, you are not having our families. We're going to build a better and stronger and our relationship. We're going to tie these things together because you're not having them. We belong to God. You are in foreign territory, and we're going to claim that territory for God.
Yes.
Anger gives strength. Now, this is it. It's a cute little story, but it's true. There was this 85-year-old man, and they were sightseers in New York City, and he went there with his wife and his sister, and they had just finished seeing a play, and after they got out of the play, they got in the car, and he sat in the back, and it was nighttime, and the wife and daughter were in the front. And as his wife started the car, two young men came with a pistol in their hand, came up to the car, opened the door, and demanded that the women give them their money and their jewelry. At first, they didn't see the old man sitting in the back seat of the car. As they turned to take off with the loot, they noticed the old man, and they started to open up the back door. And they said, give me your money and your jewelry. Okay, now, this man's 85 years old. How much energy and strength do you have at 85, okay? He said, as one of the men opened the back door, the elderly man turned toward the door, placed his feet against that door, and pushed as hard as he could. The robber was caught by surprise, and the force of the door knocked him off balance. His gun flew from his hand. He recovered from his surprise, but both he and his accomplice fled, leaving the loot behind. It took them so off balance that they forgot what they had stolen, and they left it and ran. Now, you know that those two young men could have overcome that 85-year-old man, but the anger that he was feeling because his wife and his daughter were in danger at that particular moment, he said it made him angry. So he took that anger, and it gave him strength to do something in the norm he would not do. I mean, that was a crazy thing to do, but it worked. It worked. When we harness the power of anger, it can be a source of strength and provide protection. It can keep us from being a victim. It can help us break free from the immobilization of worry and fear and empower us for constructive action. If you are a Christian, you cannot be passive. You have to be an actionary, a visionary. You have to move. But we don't want to move until God says move. But when God says move, he says move. And there are times when you can do something that, you know, you haven't even thought about it, but you just know that this idea didn't come from Satan. It says, my sheep will know my voice. When God tells you to do something, you know God's speaking to you. You don't even question it. After all the years we've been in the ministry, I know when God gives me that deep down gut feeling. I can't explain it, and I don't know why it comes, but when I get that feeling, I know that that is right, and God has given me that information, and I act on it. for years it was gold.
Oh, mother's got one of those feelings again.
You know, until it proved to be not mother's feelings, but God was communicating with me. And when my family was in some kind of a danger and the Lord alerted me to that, I moved on it. When he said move, I didn't think about the consequences. I moved on it. I got a lot of strength. And the Lord just encouraged me. You know, when the Lord gives you the encouragement to move, to be an actionary or a visionary, you have no fear. You know, some people say, well, now you should have followed this before you did that. Not when God tells you to move. And I know when he's telling me to move or if I just get anxious in my spirit. I know the feeling. That gut feeling's not there when I'm anxious. The gut feeling's up higher. And you know what I'm talking about. Okay? I'm going to blow your mind right now. Anger contributes to closer relationships. Oh, come now. I don't believe that. You have really crossed my line now. But listen. Managed anger can lead us to more intimate relationships. Couples and family who have learned to identify their anger and take time to express anger in healthy ways, and we've dealt with this already, have several traits in common. They develop more effective communication skills. They are better at problem solving, and they find it easier to trust and experience much deeper levels of intimacy and security. In our home, when one of us become angry, it's usually the girls that have this kind of an expression. I will take them into a room and close the door. And I will ask them, what is wrong? Tell me what is wrong with you. Now, this has taken years of conditioning. Because now it's going to be 3 hours minimum. By the time they're done talking and pouring their insides out to me. Now, when this happens, it doesn't matter how I feel, okay? Feelings, remember. We're looking for anger management here. If I'm going to listen and be objective and be able to give proper direction to my girls, I have to listen to what they're saying. It doesn't mean I have to agree. I do not interrupt them. I let them say anything and everything they want to say because I have to know what's in their head. I do not punish them for being angry. I do try to direct that anger as to how it's going to be expressed. And I would rather have them dump on me, and then after they get the explosion out, see, it's the explosion that we worry about. Get that explosion out in a safe place. They know they can say to me, I'm angry with God! And I'm not going to say, oh my goodness. They know I'm not going to say that. I need to know that if I'm going to minister to them. So I let them say it. God lets you say it. That reminds me, yesterday, and I'd like you to continue to pray. You've prayed many times for Lori and Larry. He was the first man that we became friends with him at the transplant center. We were down there yesterday, and he had been there for a year, and then he went home for 3 weeks, and they brought him back in Saturday, and his hepatitis C has returned to his new second liver. He's going to have a third liver transplant and join Magna. You know, they're sweet people. And when I saw Lori, Larry was down in a procedure, and when I saw Lori, she jumped up out of her chair, threw her arms around me, and started to cry. She says, I've got to tell you this. And she's Catholic, but she's a born-again Catholic. She said to me, I couldn't tell this to the priest because he would have me saying Hail Marys from now till Christmas time. But she said, Sally, I'm angry. I'm angry. How long do I watch somebody suffer? I'm angry at God because he can do something about this and he hasn't. I said, it's okay to be angry, Lori. It's even okay to tell God you're angry at him because he understands. That's not a sin to tell God you're angry at him. That is not a sin. It's what you do with that anger that becomes a sin. And as Larry came back into the room and I saw him, I wasn't quite prepared for what I was going to see. He is nothing but skin and bone. And he was as yellow as a lemon. And the spirit of death was all over him. She said, Sally, you always seem on top. How do you do it? Don't you get mad at God? Don't you get angry with God? I said, I sure do. And I tell him. And then we work it out. And I said, the secret that I've learned, I said, you're talking to God as conversational prayer. You just tell him. He knows. You just tell him, you know. Just let it all hang out. I said, but the one thing I do when I hurt the most, I reach out to minister to somebody else because it balances my scale. And when I hurt over here, boy, the devil's going to be sorry because I'm just going to slam it on over here. I'm going to touch every light, every person that I come in contact with for the kingdom of God. Because when I reach out, it takes the focus off my own pain. And it lets me think about somebody else. And it makes life worth living. If you just have to live and suffer, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But through your suffering, if you can reach out and touch someone else and minister to their need, then it balances out your scale. It balances out your scale. I saw a little name tag on her. Portland VA volunteer at Lori. So I like that sign. I said, Lori, you get out in the hall and you start volunteering. Maybe just a half an hour, 45 minutes at a time. You go into somebody else's room and you begin to minister to somebody else's need, and God will help you keep this balance. I said, right now you're sitting in this hospital room. You're doing the crafts. They have been in the hospital room over a year. They have run out of things to talk about. They're not living anymore. They're only existing. I said, get out there. Get in the mainstream of life and let Larry know when you come back in, you've got something else to talk about. You've got something else to grow with. I don't know why God's allowing this in your life. I don't know why God's allowing it in our life, but I do know, like Job said, though he slay me, I will serve him. Yes. Anger is a normal part of close relationships. Whenever two people begin a relationship, part of what attracts them are the similarities, and part of what attracts them are the differences. And when people come in my office and they say, oh, opposites attract, and my husband is opposite from me, and I'm going, because opposites do attract, but not for long. It doesn't take very long or very much time for those differences to lead to disagreement. If your husband is opposite of you, it's not impossible to have a harmonious relationship, but it's harder. My husband and I are a lot alike. So it's easier for us to have a harmonious relationship. Forget that we're in the ministry. That only makes it harder to have a harmonious relationship, because not only are you dealing with your problems, you're dealing with everybody else's problems. And all that stress comes into your home and you have to learn how to manage it. But we're not opposites. We think alike. We have the same goals. We have a lot of the same approaches on things. So when we have a discussion, we're pretty much in the same thing. There are a few things, you know, that might be different. But some people, they're Christians, and every single thing they disagree on, you got a lot of hard work to bring that into focus. But it's not impossible. It's not impossible. Disagreements often involve anger and lead to conflict. At that point, we have a choice. We can choose to spend our anger energy by dumping on our spouse or our child, showing our victim where, once again, he is clearly wrong and we are right. Control. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about that in this next session here. Or we can throw our hands up and stomp out of the room. By that act, we communicate one of two things. Either the other person is not worth taking the time to work it out, or communication between the two of us is impossible. Now, both choices lead to feelings of hopelessness and helplessness and set us up for more failures in the future. However, there is another option. We can acknowledge our fear, our hurt, our frustration, and choose to invest our anger energy by seizing this opportunity to better understand our loved one. One of the most practical ways to bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, and endure all things in 1 Corinthians 13:7 is to develop the habit of working through our differences. This takes time, but it involves listening and asking questions and listening and asking more questions until you reach an understanding. Our Our differences and disagreements provide a window of opportunity to better understand and appreciate the uniqueness of our spouse or our children or our friends. Anger provides the energy to stay focused, stick with the issue, and bring it to a positive conclusion. And that sums up the gift of anger that I didn't get to finish last time. And I know you are so excited because I'm going to deal with men in anger this morning. I knew I'd have a big group. Once I let out the title of what we were going to be discussing, you would all be here. Okay. Before I get into the heavy, heavy part of this, we're going back to Adam and Eve. They began this whole mess. And in order to understand how it all took place, we have to understand what went wrong between them, okay? Before Adam and Eve sinned, God had established the husband's headship, okay? God created man first, and he gave him tasks to perform. Then God created the woman. And in Genesis it says, I will make him a helpmeet for him. The Hebrew word for help is to aid or assist. Some of you are way ahead of me already. If Eve was created to aid Adam, it would logically be assumed that Adam was to have the leadership position. But in order to aid somebody, they have to be giving you some kind of direction. Or the wife doesn't know how to aid and assist if she's not given proper direction, okay? Now, before Adam and Eve sinned, the God established the wife's submission. Before Eve was in submission to Adam. This is clearly indicated by Scripture. In order for Eve to have fulfilled her function as an aid or an assistant, she would have to be in submission to the one she was aiding. The purpose and submission of the woman in God's creation order is reaffirmed in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 11, 3 through 10. Okay, now that was before sin. After Adam and Eve sinned, the wife's willing submission was corrupted. God said to Eve, thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And that's Genesis 3, 16. In the Hebrew, here it comes, folks. The two clauses in this sentence are in direct opposition. The first clause is in tension with the second. The literal meaning of this verse is, thy desire shall be to control thy husband.
Yes.
This same sentence structure is used in Genesis. Now hang in there because you're going to understand this whole program. Genesis 4:7. God is telling Cain that sin shall desire to control him, but he must rule over it. That's in Genesis 4:7. The fall marked the beginning of conflict over headship of the family. No longer does the husband rule easily. He must work to retain his headship. Thus, the New Testament commands the wife to submit to her husband. Now, not only was the submission corrupted of the wife because of sin, but the husband's loving leadership was corrupted. As a result of the fall, man has a corrupted desire for complete, listen to this, unchallenged authority. The desire violates the purposes of love and destroys the marriage relationship. Thus, the New Testament commands the husband to love his wife as Christ loved the church. God said to woman, thy desire shall be to control thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. The husband is to exercise headship, but to do it with wisdom, patience, and love. But can you see when the man wants unchallenged authority and the woman wants to control the husband, why we have a little bit of problems with relationships in the home? Now, this was in a Christian family. They weren't pagans, Adam and Eve. They loved the Lord. But they butted heads. Bad. And this is why, and that's where anger originated. Don't challenge my authority. I will control you if it's the last thing I do. And as in the Christian home, think of what happens in the unsaved homes. Lordy, lordy. Okay, now that you have this picture, and if you would like me to copy this off for you with little things here, this is out of Bill Gothard, if you want to know where I got this information. A single man, but so wise. That's why he said, yeah.
Good.
Okay. There are a lot of angry men today. Men and their emotions are a product of the physiological features that distinguish them from women and are part of God's design. Men are also a product of cultural conditioning. Let's see what we have done in our own culture to make men angry. They act today as a man because of how they were trained to respond in their home. Many men today respond emotionally because that's the way they were taught to respond. What about the expectations that we have for men in our culture? Let me throw a list out to you, and things are going to start to turn. Boys are expected to have more strength than girls. Boys are expected to be more rational and less emotional than girls. Boys are expected to be more aggressive and impulsive than girls. Boys are expected to be more alert and active, more self-reliant. They're supposed to play rough, and boys are expected to play games such as war and spaceman, not house or feminine activities. If these expectations are not verbalized, how do they become conveyed to the sons? This was very interesting to me. Psychologists have observed a number of ways parents respond to their sons. Roughhouse games are played more with infant sons than with infant daughters. Mothers and fathers respond to their sons' attempts to grasp, walk, and crawl, but they pay less attention to their vocalizations and their sounds, but they pay more attention to the daughters, what the daughters are saying, than what the daughters are physically doing. Okay, do you get this picture already? All right. Parents give their sons more latitude than they give their daughters in terms of letting them roam the yard and the playground. Parents tend to push boys into activities that frighten them more than they would ever push their daughters. We push into football and this sort of tough stuff, you know, but we don't want our little precious girls doing these kinds of things. They might get hurt. You know, the whole thing is here, they're people, and people get hurt. I mean, okay. What about a man and his feelings? Men do not access or handle feelings in the same way that women do. Most American men still feel uncomfortable when a man expresses his emotions, whether he's crying, raging, trembling, in fear, or being out of control. I had someone say to me a number of months ago, not from this congregation, from another congregation, it bothered them to hear my husband minister when he cried, because that particular man viewed that as a weakness. Now, what do women view that as? Compassion. Big difference. This guy's a wimp. Oh, what a compassion. I mean, now we know we have a bridge difference here, don't we? We're going parallel in two different directions. We're not together at all. Jesus wept. He was a man of compassion. That's what drew me to my husband. He was the first man that I met that wasn't rough and tough and slam dunked women. I didn't believe he was for real. I went with him 4 years waiting for him to make a mistake. I was sure if I gave him enough time and enough sets of circumstances, he would reveal himself like all the rest. very meek and very understanding and very compassionate to people. So he was trained to be compassionate. There is a difference. If you have boys, oh, for heaven's sakes, when you have an opportunity to make a difference in lives and generations in your family, teach them how to be compassionate, feeling men. Let's bind this horrible distortion, because it's a cultural thing. It's right, be a man, don't cry. What are they saying? Men have feelings, and they've been told since they're children to stuff them. Well, you can only put so much in one body. The body may stretch, but eventually those things are going to come out. Okay, most American men still feel uncomfortable when they see another man express emotion. And here's an example. A psychologist made this example. The autonomous male, the independent, strong achiever who can be counted on to always be in, what's the word?
Control.
Is still essentially the preferred male image. By whom? By males. Women don't like that. Success in the working world is predicated on the repression of self and the display of controlled, deliberate, calculated, manipulative responsiveness. To be a leader requires that one be totally goal-orientated, undistracted by personal factors, and able to tune out noise or human interruptions, which might impede forward motion. The man who feels becomes inefficient, ineffective, because he gets emotionally involved, and this inevitably slows him down and distracts him. His more dehumanized competitor will then surely pass him by. We have raised generations of men to conform to that culture. Why do the majority of men struggle with feelings? One reason is that many boys do not learn a feeling vocabulary. Now, those of you that have small boys, you can make a difference here. Girls develop their verbal skills at an earlier age and are fed a feeling vocabulary because they're girls. In contrast, boys lack men who will model a proper, healthy verbal expression of feelings and words and encourage boys to build a vocabulary. Thus, they are verbally at a disadvantage. They have been raised not to verbally express their feelings. So you get married and say, you know, you never say you love me. Well, I'm still here, aren't I? You know, they come back with some of these unfeeling, stoic, insensitive responses. But you have to stop and think. They were taught to respond that way. Have you ever known how difficult it is to unlearn a learned behavior and learn something else? Okay? They struggle to describe those strange sensations within them. And unfortunately, many boys grow up unaware that these skills are lacking. As adults, they think, that's just the way I am, and that's just the way I'm going to be. I can remember my husband saying that to me. I'd always want him to communicate with me. Tell me what you're feeling. I don't know, was his response. I said, yes, you do know. Tell me what you're feeling. He could tell me what I was feeling. He could tell me what everybody else was feeling, but don't touch my feelings. And so we began 29 years ago, we went together 4 years, of communicating with one another. I want to know how you feel. Then I'll tell him how I feel. Then he tells me how he feels. And then we try to find out what God feels. Okay? But it's been years and years and years. Some boys have no incentive to learn to express their feelings. They weren't shown the value by role models, and in many cases observed negative role models instead. My mother gave me some very good advice, and my grandmother, when I was growing up. They said, when you get serious about a young man, watch the way he treats his mother, because he will treat you the same. That is a true statement. My husband was so caring of his mother. I have to say this. I was amazed. She was a lot older, but he was so sensitive to her as a person. I thought, I like that. I like that. In showing compassion about her feelings, and he was just really compassionate. So that stuck in my mind right away. Now listen. Unfortunately, men do not learn a feeling vocabulary, and many boys were put down or ridiculed early in life for any expression of their feelings. So if your father or a male person or a mother in the family makes fun of how you feel on the inside, what are you going to do with those feelings? You're not going to share them anymore. You're going to stuff them. And then if you know that if I tell you how I feel, I'm going to get your disapproval. I'm not going to tell you how I feel. So do you see why there's relationship problems in a marriage? Going back to the book of Genesis with the control and the unchallenged authority, and then I can't even tell you what I feel? And they say to men, don't cry. Be a man. What does that have to do with crying? I had a very close friend of mine who's a professional person whose mother passed away when he was 16 years old. And he made a statement to me. He said, I made up my mind at 16. I cried at my mother's funeral, but I would never cry again. Why? That's why he was in my office. A brilliant professional person. That's why it's harder for men to be in contact with God, because he's a feeling God. And they've been used to stuffing all their emotions, and it just upsets their whole apple cart if they have to start feeling with God. They don't know how to get intimate. That's why a lot of relationships and marriage lack in meeting your emotional needs in intimacy. Because they don't have a verbalized expression of feeling. They don't know what to do with feeling. They don't even want to acknowledge they feel this. There's a book called The Secrets Men Keep by Ken Druck. The Secrets Men Keep by Ken Druck. It's a very good book that you might want to get for your husband or for yourself to understand men. Ken Druck, D-R-U-C-K. It describes, I'm going to read just a paragraph that describes the dilemma that men face. And he writes this. We got trapped at an early age in a set role. We were taught what was acceptable behavior for us as little men and what was unacceptable. We played hard at sports and fought for the right to be king of the mountain. We learned that such traits as toughness, rationality, aggression, competitiveness, self-reliance, and control over our emotions were a positive for men. Whereas tenderness, emotional sensitivity, dependence, openness to experience, and vulnerability were negative. Those are all the things we need as a woman to have our emotional needs met. Men have been socialized to be emotionally stoic by our culture. Over the years, men have evolved 1,001 clever ways to hide their feelings. They're masters at appearing emotionally unaffected and in control. I'm going to throw out a couple of these mask feelings. They rationalize a course of inaction by telling ourselves, what good is it going to do to talk about it? It's not going to change anything. Does that sound familiar? They worry, 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 never facing what they really fear. They escape into new roles or hide behind old ones. Now wait just a minute. I'm the boss around here. Have you heard that? They take the attitude that these feelings will pass, and they shrug them off as unimportant. They keep real busy. If you're real busy, we don't have to deal with feelings. We change one feeling into another by acting angry when we're really hurt. For example, they create a smoke screen, diverting attention away from their true feelings. One time when we were having a discussion, my husband and I told him some of the most meaningful communication between us is when we sit down together and you have been so taxed with everything and you put my head on your shoulder, on my shoulder, and you cry. Gives me an opportunity to minister to his feeling. Sometimes he can't put it into words, but if he cries, I know that that is an expression of what's on the inside. And it lets me know that he's real, that he can be touched, even if he doesn't verbalize it. And his response was, I feel so stupid when I do that. But it's not stupid. Why do you feel it's stupid? Because you've been told it's stupid by other people who are stupid. Doesn't that give you a wonderful sense, ladies, when you can minister to your husband when he's hurting? But our culture has told you, don't ever tell that you're hurting because you're a man and you don't hurt. That is totally ridiculous. And don't ever make fun of him when he's hurting. If he trusts you enough to let you see inside, no matter what it is, no matter how dumb you think it is, boy, you better not let him know that, because he will close that door forever and you will never get another look at what he's really feeling. Men perform thinking bypass, replacing our feelings with thought and logic, intellectualizing and rationalizing our way around feelings. Boy, haven't we seen that from men? The fact is, but what are you feeling? And then they begin to intellectualize about facts. And facts are important. I'm not minimizing them. But you can't just go on all facts. You've got to have some feeling here. They got to balance out. That's why we're feeling and they're factual. Once in a while, it gets reversed. The woman's factual and the guy's feeling. In 25 years of counseling, I've only had one couple like that. It threw me for such a loop. I had to like turn my paper upside down and try to talk to these people. You know, because everything I wanted to say to the woman was true of the man. And everything I wanted to say to the man was true of the woman. She was a journalist. She was taught to get facts. But we made it. Some men tense up their bodies so that they do not feel anything. On your mark, set. And try to penetrate that. You can stand on your head. You can do cartwheels. You can bleed in front of him. And once he's got that, you know, you're not going to penetrate it. And then they're real good at this. They let the women do the feeling. They reinforce women for being emotional and showing their feelings so that they don't have to feel. You go ahead and cry. Have a good cry. Get out of your system so I'll feel better. I mean, they do. They'll even corner you to dump emotionally so they can feel better. Then they don't have to do it. Because they just let that energy channel right through you. They just feed that thing until you're like... And they go, oh, that felt good. You know, they might not say it, but you can see it in their attitude. Okay? I'm just showing you some ploys here that men use to cover up their own feelings. They avoid situations and people who elicit certain feelings in them. Okay? My daughter dated a minister for a while who the whole family loved. Loved him to death. I was sure he was going to be my son-in-law. I won't tell you his name because he travels with a professional group that you would know the minute I would say their name. And he would see her for a while and then he'd disappear for a while. No reason, didn't call or anything. And the thing that came to me is, he's always a control person, okay? Except he wasn't mean, he had a very nice personality. he'd walk in the room, the whole room would light up, you know. And, but as he began to get close to Michelle, he felt out of control with his emotions. And when it would get to a certain point, boy, he'd back up. And then when he'd come back, they had to start all over again to get to that place. And every time they got to that place, the guy split. To the point where it did much damage to my daughter, and I had to make a phone call. I don't usually get involved in her relationships, but I got involved in that one. And I said to him, explain to me what you did from your point of view. And he said, I have no excuse. So then I knew. It was his emotions. He loved her, and it got kind of, you know how you feel kind of out of control sometimes when you love somebody? And that's what he began to feel. He couldn't control those emotions, so then he didn't want her. He wants to be in control. Okay. Sometimes men get sick or behave carelessly and hurt themselves so that they have a reeling, a reason to justify those feelings when they have to let them out. Okay. There was this medical convention at Harvard, and Dr. Levant declared that men tend to distract themselves with daydreams or tasks when they feel uncomfortable or embarrassed in a situation. Some men let their feelings build and then erupt. Men also take situations that produce uncomfortable feelings and block them, which leads to additional insensitivity to any feeling. As a result, men often express their unidentified feelings through body language. Their speech may be calm, but their body language tells you different. They may never say anything, but that look, we know. We know from across the room, I can look at my husband. Okay, I'm going to have to finish this next week because there's a whole bunch of good material, and I want you to understand men in anger before you leave here so that it will make your relationship better and you know where to start working on your relationship. Okay, men do tend to be less verbal. We're going to call them condensers. And less equipped verbally than women. So don't quite be so hard on them because they haven't been taught to be verbally expressive. And then you say, I do, and then you spill your guts every day of your life when you haven't been doing this for 20, 25 years of your life. No, women, that's even unrealistic to expect that. But if you didn't know this, then you take it all personal, right? How many take this personal? I hate that when people say, don't take this personal, but of course I take it personal. Somebody's got to do it. Women, we just run around looking for guilt, you know. Okay, women are called amplifiers. Now listen to this statistic. 7 of every 10 married men in the country are condensers. They're not verbally equipped to express feelings. Well, their wives tend to be amplifiers. And can you see this pull? It goes back to Genesis. It's just another thing of Genesis, okay? First Samuel 20. Verses 30 through 34. We're going to talk about words. 30 through 34. The lack of vocabulary and healthy models invades emotion of anger as well as other feelings. The anger a man feels may then be expressed with limited but more powerful words. These words could range from swearing to attacking and threatening words. The volume could be higher or the tone more tense. Anger is more likely to be displayed in a man as aggression. If a person does not have the verbal skills to express what he's feeling adequately, anger stored up in one person, whether it be his boss, a fellow worker, a family member, it's often released on the closest person to him, and usually with damaging results. This happened in 1 Samuel 20, verse 30 through 34, with King Saul and his son Jonathan. I'm going to be reading this out loud out of the Amplified Bible. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother who bore you? For as long as the son of Jesse lives upon the earth, you shall not be established or your kingdom. So now send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." Jonathan answered Saul, his father, "Why should he be killed? What has he done?" But Saul cast his spear at him to smite him, by which Jonathan knew that his father had determined to kill David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food that second day of the month, for he grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. And son of the perverse, rebellious woman in that day was an extremely vulgar expletive. Okay? So Saul was very ticked. And he described his anger in physical violence by throwing the sword. Okay? He couldn't even put into words what he felt. He was indicating that in his speech. And Saul, he was indicating that in his speech. Okay. Let's look at some healthy guidelines dealing in Proverbs. I want you to write down these scriptures. Proverbs 29:22. An angry man stirs up dissension, and a hot-tempered one commits many sins. Proverbs 22:24-25. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, for you may learn his ways and get yourself easily ensnared. Okay? Proverbs 29:11. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. You'll love this next part. There's another man, another book that I'd like to recommend to you. I'm going to read this quote from this book, and then we will pick up next week with A Man in Aggression. But the name of the book is The Man in the Mirror. And those of you that have sons, too, these are very good books for you to read so you don't make the same mistakes that previous generations have made by raising your sons. And it's by Patrick Morley. Or your grandchildren, if you have access to your grandchildren and you have boys, you want to be a positive influence on them. Okay, Patrick wrote this. Anger resides behind the closed doors of most of our homes. Personally, I have never lost my temper at the office. I would never want my colleagues to think I couldn't control myself. But rarely a week goes by in which the sparks of family life don't provide good tinder for a roaring fire. We put on a good show at the office and our social gatherings, but how you are behind the closed doors of your own private castle is how you really are. At the end of a long, hard day at the office, when you pull up the drawbridge to go home to your private castle, your family gets to live with the real you, lucky us. Anger destroys the quality of our personal lives, our marriages, and our health. Angry words are like irretrievable arrows released from an archer's bow. Once released, traveling through the air toward their target, they cannot be withdrawn. Their damage cannot be undone. Like the arrows of an archer, our angry words pierce like a jagged blade, ripping at the heart of their target. When anger pierces the soul of the home, the lifeblood of the family starts to drain away. You may notice that a secretary seems to find you attractive. You reflect on how your wife will no longer appreciate you. It never occurs to you that it may be you. That if that secretary knew the real you, the angry you that lives secretly behind the closed doors of your home, she would find you about as desirable as a flat tire. Good, huh? Good. I will finish next week with a man's aggression. And we'll get into women in anger next week, but I won't probably forget it. We're going to deal with a man's self-esteem. And the grieving man. Very good stuff to work on. If you want to read that account of Saul and Jonathan David and see what anger did to relationships in the Bible, very, very good study.